when they get at the top, people tend to believe or talk to them as leaders. And the fact that they are in a position of power and authority, you know, they can hire and they can fire people. And usually they make a lot of money, some of them too much money, I think. That doesn't mean they are leaders per se, they are leading. Some are, some aren't. And this is something that part of the purpose of my book is to educate the people that they, from my perspective, we should not call them leaders. Mm-hmm. We should call them managers, something else, but not necessarily leaders, because one is a leader, one's that whether they lead, he or she leads or not. That's it, you know. And you don't have to lead all the time. You can lead some of the time, that's why I advocate something I call collective leadership or shared leadership.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. This episode of The Unmistakable Creative is brought to you by 2020, where creatives go to get inspiring, authentic stock photos. If you're tired of scrolling through uninspiring, staged images, check out 2020. Their images are crowdsourced from real-world photographers, and you can choose from millions of high-quality photos available under a simple, royalty-free license. Today, 2020 is offering Unmistakable Creative listeners a free trial of 5 photos so you can see for yourself. To start your trial, go to 2020.com/unmistakable. That's the word 20, then 20.com/unmistakable to get your first 5 photos for free. Thanks to 2020 for sponsoring today's episode. This episode is also sponsored by HostGator. If you're looking to build a website or move an existing one, HostGator can help. They have 24/7 live support via phone chat and email, an easy-to-use website builder if you're not tech-savvy, and if you want to move your existing website from your existing host, they make it free and simple. Visit HostGator.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for 15% off all of their hosting packages. Sebastian, welcome to The Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah. So I was introduced to you by way of your publicist, Rob, who told me quite a bit about your work around leadership. But before we get into your work and the concepts in the book, I want to start by asking you, where did you grow up and what impact did where you grew up end up having on the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
Look, I grew up in Barcelona, Spain, which happens to be very topical now. And my growing up, if you like, it was kind of a challenging in some ways, because I lost my father at a very early age, and I grew up as a very confused young man, if you like, in terms of, you know, finding out what was it all about and what to do in life. Mm-hmm. And then later, at some point, I met a beautiful girl from Australia. And 36 years ago, I came here and ever stayed since. We got married and so forth. Mm-hmm. So, and this, so it happens after. I did work a lot. I worked for a big management consulting firm, and I did work around the world. I was very privileged from that perspective. But just going back to your question about how that affected or impacted my life, and more in particular, the book that I've written and the work that I do, is an interesting question, because in one of the chapters of my book, I talk about this. I call it the initiation to leadership. Is that I think that sometimes, or for me at least, having difficulty in finding who I was in the world and a way to express myself, it was very beneficial. I think it's something that all of us at some point find, and I think that is very, very important in the area of leadership.
Mm-hmm. You know, the experience of losing a father at an early age, how did you overcome it? And, you know, why is it that some people get so, you know, caught up in their losses and their setbacks that they end up becoming defined by them, and other people come out of them having benefited from them?
Yeah, I mean, is a good question. I think it's sometimes a matter of time and circumstances. Like the reason why I found it challenging at the time, it wasn't so much my father's loss per se, which obviously it was somewhat traumatic, but it was something that my mother said to me, which I will never forget, of course. And she said, well, now you're the man of the family and need to look after me and your two younger brothers. So, I mean, I was kind of, I didn't know at the beginning, I think I was quite shocked to process all this. But that kind of somehow imprinted in my brain or in my mind. And I have to tell you that I failed miserably. I did not a good job because I had enough difficulty in trying to look after myself. To deal with that, as I grew up, I got a lot into heavy drinking, drugs, and so forth, you know. So it wasn't until years later that I had to clean up my house, so to speak. And more in particular, when I was reading books and things about leadership, and I came across a quote by Abraham Lincoln that he said, "My concern is not whether you fail or not, but whether you are content with your failure." And then I saw the quotes like from Nelson Mandela, you know, that it just doesn't matter how many times we fail and we need to stand up, and even Bill Gates. So, and then I start to really understand that it's okay to fail in life, you know, it's okay as long as you move on. And as you said earlier, you know, you just kind of conceptualize it in a different way. Mm-hmm. So I also came to realize then reading other things about leadership that if someone never fails in life, well, firstly, that's impossible. It's pretty much impossible. What happens is that people tend to deny it, tend to kind of put it aside and pretend they've never failed. Mm-hmm. And this takes an incredible amount of energy. But once you fail and you experience what failure is like, you're in a position to want to help others to overcome obstacles, but also gives you a good sense of what is it like to be at the bottom of the barrel. And I think that's very important in terms of leadership. Because after having read all the literature, I came to the conclusion that, if you've never failed, if you have everything in life and you think you can attain absolutely everything, you actually will abuse power. And there's a lot of, politicians and corporate leaders around the world that they feel entitled to, you know, rip people off for their own benefit. And leadership, at the end of the day, is to serve others, to be there at the service of others. Mm-hmm. So that's what I talk about, the initiation to leadership. And to teach those things is extremely difficult. So I agree that one key question that has been around for a long time, I'm sure you've heard about it, is whether leaders are born or made. Mm-hmm. So I agree that leaders are made in the sense that leadership can be learned. But learning doesn't mean only reading books and listening podcasts. Mm-hmm. That's the knowledge piece, if you like, you know, all acquire information.
Yeah.
Then it's the second level where you acquire skills, what to do. But then it's the third level, we call it the level of being, who you are in the world, what are your values, what are your beliefs, and so forth. You know, what your character is, more about character than anything else. Mm-hmm. And this is very difficult to teach.
Yeah.
This is more about reflecting in your own life, you know, like this. I've mentioned my father's death and other events, you know, overcoming, kind of stop drinking, for example, you know.
Sure.
So this forges your character, and this is very, it can be learned, but it can't be really teach per se, like you teach something else, a subject matter, yeah.
So I'm curious, what lessons that you learned from the family experience of sort of being the oldest of three siblings and sort of being put in that position that you've ended up bringing into the business world?
Well, I think that one of them, perhaps the most important one, is that obviously because you're the oldest of the sibling, you expected to be the new leader. And is that maybe that happens in organizations that a lot of because people are in a senior management position, which for me actually is different than being a leader. Maybe we can talk about this later. The senior managers, but they're not necessarily leading. But it's the fact that because you're in a particular role or position or sequence in your family, if you like, there is an expectation that you will have, one, that you may know everything and that you can do certain things. It's a tremendous expectation. And I think in the business world, a lot of people feel that way. And I think particularly today that the context has changed so much. I mean, we've gone through so much change and things are, I call it, very rapid, a lot of high velocity. There's a lot of turbulence in the world. There's a lot of confusion. Some people call it VUCA. Perhaps you've heard about that, volatility, uncertainty, and so forth. So they feel they need to know everything. Today is not really necessary. In fact, a good leader, what might do is surround himself or herself of people that know more than him about certain things, subject matter experts. And it's about extracting this knowledge and this wisdom, if you like, to make decisions and help others to make decisions. But there is no necessarily a need to know everything, and much less in today's, because there's so much to know. So I think that's what I see in the corporate world, that sometimes leaders, they feel they need to have all the answers. And maybe in the years, a few years ago, it was like this, but today is certainly not like this. Mm-hmm. And some of the problems we're facing today are problems with no answers. And that's something else I talk in the book, the distinction between technical problems and adaptive challenges or wicked problems. So, yeah, that's perhaps the biggest lesson that I've learned. That it's okay not to know everything, and it's also okay to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. So, one of the things that has really sort of struck me as somebody who's been pretty, you know, sort of disconnected from the corporate world for such a long time is, you know, we have so many books that have been written about leadership, power, human behavior, and yet you see such a wide variation in results that people get in the corporate world. And like in my mind, I'm kind of like, okay, for every vice president and CEO, there's 1,000 people who will never be in that position. Why is that? And you know, what is your perspective on that?
Why people get in senior management positions?
Yeah, I mean, why do we see such a variation in people's sort of ability to thrive in those environments?
Well, I think that what the people thrive in those environments and get at the top, I mean, obviously they are people that are smart, they're intelligent, there's no doubt about that, in somehow. And usually they tend to be very savvy and technical experts in a particular area. So because of this, and also I have to say, politics, if you like.
Yeah.
learning to maneuver and you know, I don't know how to put it, but navigating that world of relationships, if you like, but more so sort of politics and in some environments more than others. Like if you talk about politics, obviously there's a lot of politics in there. If you talk about corporations, probably also politics, but another kind. But if you go to communities, it's the same thing. I think that's unavoidable. So I think some of those people, my guess is that probably very early in age, they learn about how to navigate that world of politics. But as I said earlier, I mean, when they get at the top, people tend to believe or talk to them as leaders. And the fact that they are in a position of power and authority, you know, they can hire and they can fire people, and usually they make a lot of money, some of them too much money, I think. That doesn't mean they are leaders per se, they are leading. Some are, some aren't. And this is something that part of the purpose of my book is to educate the people that they, from my perspective, we should not call them leaders. Mm-hmm. We should call them managers, something else, but not necessarily leaders, because one is a leader, one's that whether he or she leads or not. That's it, you know. And you don't have to lead all the time. You can lead some of the time, that's why I advocate something I call collective leadership or shared leadership.
Mm-hmm. So do you think there are people who, I mean, simply don't thrive in sort of the corporate environment, like people who are entrepreneurs who are trying to force sort of square pegs into round holes by working corporate jobs?
Yeah, I mean, it requires a certain degree of stamina.
Uh-huh.
It requires a degree of putting up with things that you don't like and you don't agree. I think also something I mentioned early in my book, my first corporate job after I graduated was with a very large international management consulting firm, and I was sent overseas to a project. And I was terrified what I saw, because what they were doing, it was quite the opposite of what I've learned and what I believed in. And I made another mistake, which was to stay in, because I thought, oh, things will change. And also, I have to admit, it was my first job. I was getting money. So, you know, I actually did not listen to my inner voice, if you like, and did something which, in hindsight, I should have done different, if you like. And I paid a high price eventually, because obviously they saw I wasn't motivated and they fired me. So that's the other lesson. Always be true to yourself. But all these things is what build my character, in a sense. So yes, some people are more tolerant of putting up with this morass of things, being told what to do. Some people are very creative. Like, I consider myself creative. The more creative you are, I think, obviously depends on the organization, but far more difficult is to be in a corporation with a lot of processes and procedures, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in that treadmill. So that's why entrepreneurship, so many entrepreneurs that are there thriving today and doing amazing things, you know. So to a degree, it depends on your personality. It depends on the area of expertise that you work. So yeah, it's not for everyone, most definitely.
Okay. This episode of The Unmistakable Creative is sponsored by FreshBooks. So the working world has changed, and with the growth of the internet, there's never been more opportunities for the self-employed. And to meet this need, FreshBooks is excited to announce the launch of an all-new version of their cloud accounting software. It's been redesigned from the ground up and custom-built for exactly the way you work. Get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid quickly. The all-new FreshBooks is not only ridiculously easy to use, it's also packed full of powerful features. You can create and send professional looking invoices in less than 30 seconds. You can set up online payments with just a couple of clicks and get paid up to 4 days faster. And you can see when your client has seen your invoice and put an end to the guessing games. Not only that, FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted trial for free to Unmistakable Creative listeners. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/creative and enter Unmistakable Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Well, so I know you have sort of six key areas that you get into in the book. So I want to go into each one in a bit more detail. You know, you talk about current leadership challenges, leading without maps, errors, self-leadership, values and ethics, and leadership and impact on performance. So I want to do a deep dive into each one of those areas. And I think maybe one of the more fitting things to talk about, perhaps for the area of current leadership challenges, is something like Uber. Like, what is your view on something like that?
Oh, yeah, Uber. Well, I mean, Uber is a very interesting phenomenon. In fact, I took an Uber yesterday, and I was talking to the guy driving, a young guy, and he was telling me that now they are imposing, the taxi drivers are really complaining, and they're going to put restrictions or something. But Uber is a very good example, I think, of someone being coming up with a very great idea, very smart, and at the same time an example of an industry that has been very complacent, that has been there thinking perhaps that they're going to have business forever and not doing anything. And we've seen that in so many cases. You know, you go back to, I don't know, maybe once upon a time you had a Nokia as a mobile. Or a cell that you call it in the US. And then maybe you later had a, what was it called? What were the other ones that came after that? I can't remember now. But also Kodak, for example, was another example. So because technology moves so quickly and so fast, and the people are coming up with, the entrepreneurs with so many ideas, if certain pockets of the industry don't move on, they'll lose business. And then, of course, they get upset and they try the government to make decisions to, we get into politics again, you know, try to block people. So, I think Uber is a good example of showing all these kinds of issues and problems. I mean, I don't have a particular view whether they're doing something right or wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, and to be perfectly honest, maybe I don't know it enough to make a judgment of in that sense. You know, BlackBerry, that's the one I was thinking.
Sure.
I bet you probably had a BlackBerry at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, some people still have them, but today most people will have an Apple or equivalent kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the lesson is that you got to move on. You got to keep up with technology in a way, and understand the technology, the impact this is having on us.
Yeah.
It's always a double-edged sword, I think.
Sure.
You know, everything in this life, I look at it, has got pros and cons. You know, there's no always something that is the best solution.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at weapons, for example, you know, it's the same thing. You know, energy, technology is there. And this is, for me, the link to leadership. It goes back to us. We are free human beings. We're supposed to have intelligence and wisdom to make the right decisions. And at the moment, there is a big lack of trust in the world. We don't trust each other. That's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
We don't trust each other, which is very sad, I think.
Mm. How do we rebuild that trust?
How we build that trust? Great question. Well, I think, and unfortunately, part of how we are is that we need to experience crisis to realize how many problems we got. It seems history seems to be repeating itself. But building trust is about relationships. It's about taking risks. It's about, it can only be done through relationships. I mean, and that's why my book is all about relationships. Leadership is about relationships. But it starts first with you, in a sense. You know, I mentioned about building character earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with you and about getting a clarity. A lot of people talk about happiness those days as well, okay? And everybody, at the end of the day, if you ask them, they might admit it or not, but everybody wants to be happy. Who doesn't want to be happy? Now, that doesn't mean that you are in a bubble world, in a fantasy world, in Disneyland. That's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about finding a way to live in your life and to work and express yourself that is fulfilling for you. And to do that and to do it properly, you need to understand who you are. What are your strengths? That's something else that traditionally we've never focused so much. We're always very good in finding what's wrong with people. So finding what strengths and how can you apply those things. And also, again, as I said earlier, building your character. So building character, just in case that any listener questions, what does that mean? Well, that means that you will do the right thing according to you, by you, despite external pressures. That's what building character means.
Mm-hmm.
Being a person of integrity, being a person that can be trusted. And that's where trust starts. Trust with yourself. You know, be a man or a woman, a person of your word. Being clear on who you are and what you want to do, setting your goals, your values, and so forth, and principles. So then people start to see you as identifying you as someone like that, someone to look upon, and that's part of leadership already. Because when people do that, and you become a role model, whether you realize it or not. That's already exercising leadership. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, sending a message through everything you do in life. And in many cases, helping people. Like, for example, I do the work I do. My work is part of, you know, help others, if you like, to develop themselves and develop leadership. But building trust requires a lot of commitment, because first, knowing yourself, self-awareness that we talk about,
mm-hmm.
it requires a commitment and a clarity about what you do in life and just going there and do it, you know, and leading by those principles, like respecting others, not blaming people when things go wrong, keeping your promises. So all these things at the end of the day adds up to build trust.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about this idea of what you mean by leading without maps. You know, as somebody who believes that, you know, my work comes without a map, that really kind of struck a chord with me. So I want to do a deeper dive into that. What do you mean by that?
All right. Well, can I tell you a little story?
Yes, absolutely.
So one day, there was a group of senior managers, very successful senior managers that decided to challenge themselves to leave a legacy in the world. And these guys have done everything, had all the money in the world. So they decided to climb Mount Everest. And they were all very excited at first, savoring basically the adventure of their lives. And on the second day, unexpectedly, a big storm came along and triggered an avalanche. And to make things worse, the porter, the Sherpa that was carrying things, fell off a cliff carrying valuable supplies. So they were literally shocked, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And then the next day, still confused, they decided to resume the journey. And after 2 days of going around in circles, they declared themselves lost. So isolation amplified, cold, hunger, you know, they just really thought they were going to die. And all of a sudden, one of them pulled up a map from their backpack. He says, look, I found a map. So they all gathered together. And all of a sudden, when they saw the map, they all got excited. They went from being demoralized, with no energy, no hope, to being very energized, very hopeful, very excited. In fact, they start working again. They recalibrated, going back to the base. And they remember things like, for example, one said, oh, I remember a Norwegian climber that told me that in those cases, we should really work steady pace, one behind the other, and be very aware to our surroundings. So with all this, within another 2 days, they got back to the base. They were exhausted, they were tired, they were hungry, but they were safe, alive and safe. Now, the amazing thing was that when they looked at the map, it wasn't the map of the Mount Everest. It was a map of elsewhere that is about 200 k's away from that. So how on earth managed to get back? Well, they managed to get back because whether the map was the map of Himalayas or not, it was kind of irrelevant. What the map did is provided them the hope, the energy, the resilience to go back and move on, to trigger all their resources and start working as a group. And that's why I say that you don't live with maps today. We live in such a complex world that is changing all the times. Once upon a time, organizations had a strategy, and that was it. Today, a strategy, I'm not saying you should not have a strategy. I'm saying that strategy means much less than it meant before. Because before you know it, a new technology comes in, and the market has changed. You don't rely on maps. You make the terrain, you make the map as they did, as you go. And you need to rely more on each other, you need to trust more each other, and you need to trust more your experience as well. So that's what I mean by leading without maps, which, by the way, reminds me of a poet, a Spanish poet called Antonio Machado, that has got a poem that talks about wayfarer. He says, wayfarer, you make the way as you go. And I know that sounds very challenging, but you got to leave one day from the other. And I think if you really listen to this, I'm sure your listeners will identify with that, you can plan many things for today or tomorrow, but you well know that rarely it'll go as the plan. You'll have phone calls, things will happen, and you'll have to deviate. So leadership is about being able to deal with whatever comes up in the next 5 minutes. And that's something else I talk about when I run my programs and that thing. A lot of people want, oh, what is the content? We want a structure. But we live in a world that you got to let go of that. And if you build confidence, if you build character, if you build hope and resilience, you go somewhere and you will deal with whatever comes up. And that's what we need in the world today. That expectation that we'll live in a predictable world is gone. And quite frankly, I would think it's boring. I mean, to a degree, challenges that kind of keep you alive, you know. So yeah, that's what I call without maps, that there's no longer maps that will tell you where to go. You need to, and if you find them, well, that's fantastic. But the reality is that you need to make the terrain the way as you go.
Now, what about errors?
Like mistakes?
Yeah. I mean, I know you dedicated a section to that in the book as well.
Yeah. As I was mentioning earlier in the book, I think that this is fundamental in terms of learning. And errors, particularly what errors you made in life. One of the great, if not the greatest errors that I made at some point, is not admitting to myself and to others that I've made errors. I was conditioned, and I think to a degree many of us are, that if we admit errors or mistakes, is like we are, is not acceptable. So I think that's wrong in that sense. So it's very important that we overcome errors, that making an error doesn't make you a better or worse person. So, you were talking about building trust earlier, admitting errors, admitting that you made errors and sharing errors with other people, making yourself vulnerable, that builds trust. I mean, I actually spoken with many leaders sometimes that they ask that question, how can I get closer, build up to the team? Well, says, well, I say to them, have you shared any stories where you've made mistakes learning, you know? And sometimes they don't see the connection. I says, well, if you appear to be a very highly successful person in front of your team that never made a mistake, never fail, you know, they're not going to relate to you because some of these people are failing every day. And if they need to build the confidence by you sharing you've made errors, it's going to establish a connection. They're going to trust you more. So errors is very important, yeah. And I know that it's a strong conditioning that we should not talk about our errors because then we perceive as being incompetent. So it's a big obstacle.
Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is sponsored by Design Crowd. Unmistakable Creative listeners have used Design Crowd for logo, web, and graphic design. Here's how it works. You go to designcrowd.com and you set up your design brief, and you'll get submissions from anywhere between 60 to 100 designers from around the world. If you like the designs you get, you can then approve payment. If you don't like what you get, you can go back to the crowd and ask for more, or ask for your money back. To see what other Unmistakable Creative listeners have designed and save $100 on your first project, visit designcrowd.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for $100 off. Today's episode is also sponsored by our friends at HostGator. They host your website and they have 24/7 live support via phone, chat, and email. An easy-to-use website builder if you're not tech-savvy, one-click WordPress installs, and if you want to switch from an existing host to HostGator, it's free and it's simple. And because you're an Unmistakable Creative listener, you're getting 30% off all of their hosting packages. So visit HostGator.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for 30% off.
So one of the things that I'm really curious about is, you know, why is it that when we do performance improvement plans, I know because having been put on them, but that was pretty much the end of my time in the corporate world. But like I noticed almost all performance improvement efforts basically work on amplifying fixing the things that people suck at as opposed to doing things that they're really good, like, you know, amplifying their strengths. And yeah, I'm curious, yeah. Why is that the default?
Well, that is actually a very important thing, and it's just in recent years it's coming up a lot, and it's a lot of organizations are changing gears. But to get a job, you get your job description, they tell you what to do. After a while, after a few months, most people, you know, the honeymoon is gone. They find out that they're there not to do exactly what they were asked to do. In the book, I referred to this about the breach of psychological contracts. In fact, I had an email from someone yesterday who was telling me about that. But I think that people focus or have been tending to focus on what needs to get done and had that mentality that anyone can kind of do it. And at the end of the day, we all the same, but we're all very different. So we know through research that if people spend time doing what they're best at it, they put their talents and their strengths into play. That's a great source of, I was talking about happiness earlier, or satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And they do it better. So the key is to finding, well, what you people are good at. See, it's the old mentality that leaders in particular, or people, need to be well-rounded people, they call it, well-rounded people, like a circle. We know today that what you want is actually people that apply their strengths, their key strengths, 3, 5. So it's more like a star. So people today are not circles, they're stars, and so they should be. You know, you look at a great player, a basketball player, or a football player that is good at the front, or a striker, would you put them as the goalkeeper?
No.
Of course.
Yeah. But
having said this, you want a team that is well-rounded. So if you get all stars, you get a good, well-rounded team. And those are winning teams, you know. Mm-hmm. And the players know each other's strengths. So managers or leaders should spend a lot of time with the teams having those conversations. And many, they don't see that as productive. So I've got things to do. See, they focus too much on the task and not in actual the people building the team. And this is critically important, because the other thing that does, it doesn't build what we call psychological safety. Going back to trust that you've mentioned earlier, again, that's why it's so important. If people don't talk together about their challenges, what they don't know, and their mistakes, mm-hmm. then they move on. And that's why change fail. But people talk about up to 70% of change initiatives failing. You got to focus first on the people and building a very solid team, building the trust. So, the most successful teams are the ones that people talk very openly and candidly about each other, and they share the errors, going back to errors and going back to trust. Google did a great project, and that's one of the things they found out, you know. The best teams were those ones that they learn how to talk very openly about themselves, whether they knew things or they didn't know things, when they were making mistakes, because then everybody knew and they were all on the same page. And for many managers and leaders, this sounds paradoxical. They just don't get it. They go rush, doing things, and it just doesn't work, you know. Mm-hmm.
So let's get into this idea of self-leadership and how one can, you know, develop that in themselves.
Well, self-leadership is the foundation of leadership. It's developing your own leadership. And essentially it's about a little bit what I was alluding to earlier. It's about understanding who you are as a human being, understanding what are your strengths, understanding where do you want to go, goal setting, understanding how do you arrive where you are, what shape your life in a sense. A lot of people have opinions, have worldviews, and maybe have no idea why they have those. So it's questioning why I think the way I think. Because I think that we're not just our opinions, we're not our thoughts, we're not our feelings. I think that we are above all this, you know? And it's only by becoming aware of that that we can change it. So in essence, is building self-awareness and building character. That's how you build self-leadership. Self-leadership is about leading yourself, you know, finding in life a way where to go and having the drive and the motivation and the commitment to get there, the energy. It's almost about, I know it sounds a bit over the top, but kind of being self-sufficient somehow. Mm-hmm. Being clear about where you're going in life.
Yeah. Well, I think that makes a perfect transition to talk a little bit about values and ethics. So, you know, one of the things that I'm thinking about is, you know, looking at this heading of values and ethics is, you know, when I was making career choices very early post-college, nobody ever talked to me about, you know, thinking about what it is that I actually, you know, placed value on. It was always about how impressive will this look on a resume and how much does it pay? Yes. Like values were pretty much, you know, given a back seat. And, you know, perhaps that's changing more and more based on the fact that we have access to information, we have access to people like you through podcasts. But I'm curious, like, why is that not prioritized so early in our careers? And what is the impact on leadership and, you know, self-satisfaction with a career when it comes to values?
What a great question. I mean, same for me, by the way. I went to school, never heard about values, never heard about emotional intelligence, never heard about leadership in a sense, which I think now things are changing. And I hope, my dream is that one day at schools, and I know there are some, they'll do it, but all schools will teach leadership as something very important as a subject. But yeah, values is an interesting one, because we had a bit of a values fever, I think. But values is understanding what had made you to desire, to value, or be driven to certain things and not others. So it's like a decision-making component in your life. We make decisions based on what we value. And they change over life. They change over time, you know. I don't know, as a young man many years ago, I didn't know what I valued, to be perfectly honest. People would ask me, what are you going to do when you grow up? And my father happened to be a doctor. So that's what I would say, you know. And I knew there was family pressure. So I would, and this tends to happen a lot. That's very important. You've mentioned it earlier. It says, You just want it to be like, you know, put your resume, put a front, you know, put a nice front. And I think that's kind of dangerous in a way if we take it too at heart and we don't challenge it, you know, because that is what I was saying, that not admitting errors. You become preoccupied with putting a nice front, but the inside is very messy. And this links to authentic leadership, is how to be authentic, you know. And this requires work. Because the environment, the pressure from outside, is not conducive to this. So building character is getting that clarity that goes back again to self-leadership and making sure that when you present yourself is who you are, and that will derive satisfaction. And values change. I mean, as I said, as a young man, maybe that the values that you had, or I had at least, that were more like, come from outside. And then through moving in life, I realized that, well, that's not really what I like. You know, what do I like? What drives me? And this takes a search, takes time to look at, you know. And values, to be perfectly honest, sometimes become a bit of a rhetoric in organizations. You know, they always honesty, teamwork, collaboration. But you go there in reality and it's none of that. You know, become like a wallpaper. Mm-hmm. So part of what people need to do in organizations is trying to challenge that. So if things are happening in a way that is contrary to our values, being able to stand up and speak up and be given that right. So again, it's about building trust, collaboration, you know, great teams, great organizations, work around that, but at least try to.
Mm-hmm. So what is the impact of leadership on performance, you know, not just from the leaders themselves, but the people that are around them?
Well, leadership drives performance. I was asked to write a little blog yesterday, and it was about how you build credibility as a leader. That was the blog about, and why it's important. So you start by building trust, as you mentioned earlier, being fair to people. Fairness is very important. If you treat people differently, if you bully people, if you discriminate people, that's no good. So you need to be fair. You need to fulfill the expectations that others expect from you. So you put those three things together, that's credibility. And that's an assessment that people make about you. It's a thinking, it's a mental process. But if you get all the ticks, you get high levels of that credibility, then people start to get connected with you emotionally. It means they are satisfied about working with you and they are committed. And this is extremely important. Commitment is even more important than motivation. Because motivation is what to begin things, but commitment is to continue things. So when you've got all these elements, then is when you get into the hands that I call it. So the credibility piece is the head, the mental, the assessment. Then it becomes the heart, if you like, as a symbol. That's the satisfaction and the commitment, the emotional connection, which is very, very important. And the third one is the hands. And that is what is the I call it the discretionary effort, which means making the extra effort, going the extra mile, going way beyond what's expected from you. And the other one, interestingly enough, is the innovation, is the creative thinking. Because when you feel satisfied and committed, you so well that you become creative, like the people in the mountains with the map. Once they found the map, it wasn't the right map, but that doesn't matter in that sense. The map triggered the hope, triggered the energy again, and the creativity. So once you got all these elements together, that's when people will move mountains for you. And I know everybody wants that, but they don't understand that it needs to be in that sequence. It starts with you telling the truth, being transparent, building trust, treating people respectfully, fulfilling the expectations. So that's a lot of things when you think about it. And this, you have to do that. That's hard work. Mm-hmm. And then becomes the rest of it.
Wow. Well, you have packed a lot of insight into 45 minutes. So I want to finish with one last question, which is how we finish all of our interviews at The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Like unique.
However you define it.
Yeah. What makes someone unmistakable? I think it's being true to your character. I mean, if I had to choose a very short and simple way to say it, is find what's your character, build your character, and be true to your character. Because the first thing that will happen is that you'll be immensely satisfied with yourself. And this is what matters the most at the end of the day. Be true to yourself, be authentic to yourself by being true to your character, building your character, and integrate your character. Because if you do that, everything else will happen almost spontaneously. Because you will exude energy, you will exude satisfaction, happiness, if you like, and this inspires people. Mm. This helps people. So that would be my message. Mm. Find out what really character is, and as I said earlier, character is about being true to yourself and doing the right things that you feel you need to do, despite outside pressures. But you need to find out what is this inner compass, what is that character. And obviously that goes together with what are my strengths, what am I good at, what is unique about me, and what is the combination of that. Like I know my top five strengths, for example, which is, you know, strategic, activator, maximizer, self-assurance, and coordinator. It's a unique combination. It's very rare to find. So that gives you that uniqueness of that being unmistakable, as you said. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story and your insights with our listeners. Where can people learn more about you, your work, and the book?
They can go. They can actually purchase the book in Amazon, or they can go into my website, which is leadershipresults.com.au.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.